Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 12, Creation of the Kumaras and Others, text number 34. Once upon a time, when Brahma was thinking of how to create the world as in the past millennium, the four Vedas, which contained all varieties of knowledge, became manifested from his four mouths. We'll do that responsibly.
Once upon a time,
when Brahma was thinking of how to create the worlds, as in the past millennium, the four Vedas, which contain all varieties of knowledge, became manifested from his four mouths. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. As a fire can consume anything and everything without being contaminated, so by the grace of the Lord, the five Brahmas' greatness consumed his desire for the sinful act of sex with his daughter. The Vedas are the source of all knowledge, and they were first revealed to Brahma by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, while Brahma was thinking of recreating the material world. Brahma is powerful by dint of his devotional service unto the Lord, and the Lord is always ready to forgive his devotee if by chance he falls down from the noble path of devotional service. The Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.42 confirms this as follows. Swapada mulam vidita priyasya chakvanya bhavasya hari parishya vikamayat chot patitam kutam chid tanoti sarvam hiddi sanivishta. Any person who is engaged 100% in the transcendental loving service of the Lord at his lotus feet is very dear to the personality of Godhead, Hari. And the Lord, being situated in the heart of the devotee, excuses all kinds of sins committed by chance. It was never expected that a great personality like Brahma would ever think of sex indulgence with his daughter. The example shown by Brahma only suggests that the power of material nature is so strong that it can act upon everyone, even Brahma. Brahma was saved by the mercy of the Lord with a little punishment, but by the grace of the Lord he did not lose his prestige as the great Brahma. Once upon a time, when Brahma was thinking of how to create the worlds in the past millennium, the four Vedas, which contain all varieties of knowledge, became manifest from his four mouths. So this is a very mysterious part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. which can be very easily misunderstood, therefore, because it is, you know, it's not a simple and straightforward pastime where a most elevated personality is intent upon performing one of a very low, degrading sinful activity. And then to have the Supreme Lord excuse that activity and for that personality to retain his prestigious position as a devotee. So many contradicting, you know, contradictory paradoxical elements to this. So, you know, for our understanding, of course, we have to try to understand the Lord's mood in this. After all, he is the supreme authority. And for our practical application in this age of Kali, we also have to be very careful to follow Srila Prabhupada's highlighting what we should take from this. Because it's very easy to take the wrong thing from a pastime like this. Now, Srila Prabhupada, in his lectures, commenting on these pastimes of Brahmaji, becoming a victim of sex life, one of the main points that he stresses is that don't take it that even Brahma, who is a great authority, he engages in these nonsense activities, therefore if it is okay for Brahma, then I shall also be excused from such rascaldom. That's that. Prabhupada says, don't take it that way. rather, take it this way. This is the main thing you should take. That, as Prabhupada says again in the same purport, the example shown by Brahma only suggests that the power of material nature is so strong that it can act upon everyone, even Brahma. That's one of the main things that Prabhupada highlights in commenting on this, both in his purport and in his answering questions to devotees. In other words, naturally, because our mind is inclined towards enjoying the material energy, the mind is always looking for good excuses, justifications, philosophical references, even in Srila Prabhupada's books, that condone, being a bit of a mischief every now and then as a devotee. You know, so the mind looks for that sort of direction. So therefore, here we see that Lord Krishna says, the Lord is always ready to forgive his devotee if by chance he falls down from the noble path of devotional service. And then, so one may think, well, okay, you know, look what Brahma did. He was forgiven. So that shows me that, you know, if I do all sorts of nonsense, then Krishna is so kind, he'll just forgive me for being a nonsense. Because, after all, Krishna loves his devotees, and I'm one of Krishna's devotees. This verse is quoted from the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 11th canto, chapter 5, and it gives qualification as to the nature of one who is Krishna's devotee, who is actually excused from all kinds of sins committed by chance. And it's similar to the verse in the 10th canto, the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, you know, to those who are always constantly engaged in my devotional service, to them I give the knowledge by which they can come to me. They can go back to Godhead. He gives that knowledge. And it's the same message that Prabhupada, generally, when people read the Gita, one time Srila Prabhupada was in India, he was speaking with some members from the Indian congregation who were not really following Prabhupada, they're not following Prabhupada at all, but you know, they were quoting that verse from the Bhagavad Gita, that yes, we're also devotees and Krishna is giving us, you know, guidance, he's speaking to us and he's giving us direction. The Prabhupada said, quite frankly, no. He doesn't speak to everyone like that. That's for those who engage in his devotional service 100%. With love and devotion. To them he speaks. He says it himself. So Prabhupada, just very, very frank. No, he's not talking to everyone. Not everyone's getting that direction, how to go back to Godhead. You know, if someone is a rascal and they're a devotee of everything but Krishna and giving lip service to being, and in the name of hodgepodge, they're calling that devotional service to Krishna, Krishna's not directing them, giving them direction how to go back to Godhead. So, here this verse from the 11th canto also says, any person who is engaged 100% in the transcendental loving service of the Lord at his lotus feet is very dear to the personality of Godhead. And the Lord being situated in the heart of the devotee excuses all kinds of sins committed by chance. So that same is there. And we see in the Bhagavad Gita also many times where, again, I think even in the same section of the chapter 10, that verse, Tisham Sadhari Yuktanam Patadam Pritipurvakam Tadami Buddha Yogam Tam Yinamam Upriyantam Te. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. And here in verse number 9, Machchita Madhgatapana Puriyanta Parasparam Kadiyantas Jamam Nityam Tushanti Charamanti Cha. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service. And they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. And in many other places in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes the nature of his devotees, that they're always constantly endeavouring for perfection. They're always striving in that direction. So he gives the qualifications of those who are most eligible for that mercy of Krishna. And we see that mood of Krishna was reflected, you know, it's very easy to see in the early past times of ISKCON, where you have many people who became devotees. And, you know, in those first 1 or 2 years, it was very difficult for, especially the first year or so, many of Prabhupada's followers and disciples, you know, found it very difficult. They were still engaged in, you know, all sorts of activities where, you know, they hadn't really given up some of their bad habits, and they were sort of going back and forth a little bit to their bad habits. And yet we see that Srila Prabhupada was extremely lenient and very, you know, readily excused those followers from doing all sorts of things. You know, there's pastimes of where, you know, when they were carving the Jagannath deity, and you know, someone was smoking, and I think they had an ashtray or something, or put the cigarette on top of Jagannath's head, you know, and just the leniency in which Prabhupada didn't want that devotee to do that allowed them to continue the service. But you know, it's something we can't even imagine, that sort of you know, horrific, you know, from our perspective, activity, and yet how gentle Srila Prabhupada was, you know. So, but, you know, he saw in those devotees that they were actually, despite, you know, their not able to come to the platform of devotional service, he saw that they were fully dedicated to Srila Prabhupada. You know, some of those devotees were working, you know, from morning to night without practically any other engagement. And just whatever Srila Prabhupada's desire was, they pretty much were just giving their entire life to do that, to the best of their ability. So, you know, that mood where someone has really given their life and soul wholeheartedly to Srila Prabhupada, to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, to Lord Krishna, just constantly endeavouring, and despite not being on the platform of perfection, but they're endeavouring to the best of their ability in that direction, like that. They're 100%, you know, 100% endeavouring in that direction, but they're certainly not on the path of perfection. I mean, they're on the path of perfection, but they're not on the platform of perfection. So, so we can see this mood of Krishna is there. He likes to see, as he stated in the Bhagavad Gita, that one is endeavouring for perfection in devotional service to the best of their ability, and they're endeavouring to become Krishna's devotee. That those things which are very dear to Krishna, that Krishna's devotee means, as I said, he says here, the thoughts of my devotees dwell in me, their lives are fully devoted to my service, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. So the devotees, their qualification is that they're always absorbed in thinking about Krishna. What makes Krishna happy? In other words, they're trying to, they're always conversing and enlightening one another about Krishna. That if we distribute Srila Prabhupada's books, Krishna becomes very happy. If we maintain the deity worship on a very nice standard, Krishna becomes very happy. You know, if we're acting to help people to come to Krishna consciousness, to maintain themselves in Krishna consciousness, and ultimately to go back to the spiritual world, without looking after our personal ambitions for, you know, wealth, fame, distinction, power, facility, what have you, but we're actually, you know, trying to help people in their Krishna consciousness, then that is being Krishna's devotee, not the devotee of our mind, not the devotee of our senses. So, in ISKCON, there are many, one may think, because I'm a member of ISKCON, then automatically that qualifies me to be very dear to Krishna. And in one sense it does. In one sense it does. Because all of ISKCON is devoted to pleasing Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada. But I remember, just, you know, on that point, that when I got my first Shalagram Shila, I was very, I was feeling that, you know, I don't know how I'm going to worship the Shalagram Shila, because, you know, I know that it's Shalagram Shila, you have to be very careful. It's Krishna himself, and I was managing the farm at that stage, and very, very busy, and I knew that I would have, you know, only be able to do a very simple worship. And I had the Shalagram, I had no real, you know, apart from, I had been reading about the Shalagram. It's amazing how the Shalagram and the Govardhan Shila reciprocate. Once I was on the farm and I spent 2 or 3 days reading about the glories of worshipping Govardhan Shila. And that night when I went to bed, I thought, gee, it would be so nice to worship Govardhan Shila. I could just once worship Govardhan Shila. But here I am, you know, out at Bambara, you know, a million miles from Vrindavan. You know, so many miles from many temples, big temples. Anyway, the next morning, a devotee from Vaina Gopal arrived unexpectedly with his wife, and she's a god sister of mine. And they brought the Govardhan Shila, and he asked if he could put it on the altar, and perhaps I could worship him in the morning when I worship Kuna Thai, which I did every morning. And so, you know, practically, he was worshipping. Similarly, I'd actually been worshipping, reading about Shalagram, and then Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj arrived at the farm, and he came up to me and said, "Come, get, close your eyes and hold out your hand." And I was expecting some burfi or something like that, and he put something in my hand, and when I looked, there was a Shalagram like that, you know. So I hadn't asked, but, you know. So Krishna is very, very reciprocal with his devotees. But I remember that night I was actually feeling very, I was really worried, you know, that I don't know how I'll actually be able to prop. I knew that I'd only be able to worship the Shalagrams in a very simple way, and I was worried that therefore he may not stay with me. So I actually had a dream that night, and I I saw the shalagrams in the dream, and the shalagram said, don't worry, Ganga, about that you'll only do simple worship. He said, I'm just happy to be worshipped in ISKCON. And I've always you know, remembered that, because there is a special mercy that you do get from Krishna just by being, you know, affiliated to the best of your ability with ISKCON. Because, you know, there are shalagrams all over India and various places, but, you know, many people who worship shalagram don't recognize Krishna. And certainly, you know, many of them don't recognize Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They don't acknowledge the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. They don't acknowledge the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They don't acknowledge Srila Prabhupada so much. You know. And just for the fact that we do that, the simple worship that we do in ISKCON is very attractive to Krishna. Because, you know, we acknowledge wholeheartedly. You know, we may not be on the platform that we can consider ourselves to be an advanced devotee, but just the fact that we're trying in that vein is very, very attractive to Krishna. Very attractive. And he's very happy. So, but at the same time, if we are within ISKCON, we have to make sure we are aligned with Prabhupada. Not that, you know, we can come to ISKCON and not really put our faith in Srila Prabhupada or his books or the Sankirtan movement. You know, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement is, as Prabhupada said, it is simple and sublime. You know, it is based upon simplicity. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu purposely made devotional service as easy and as simple as it is possible to make. That just by chanting Hare Krishna, having some Krishna Prasad, associating with devotees, you know, dancing, chanting, doing whatever service we can to preach, but very, very simple, that one is able to become a pure devotee of the Lord and go back to Godhead. He purposely made it like that. but for many people, you know, that simple and, you know, very lenient process of the Sankirtan movement is seen as a fault, you know, for many people. And even, you know, we sometimes see that even when people are affiliated with ISKCON, because ISKCON now, in many places of the world, it's a nice place to affiliate with. There's so much prasadam, big temples, really nice and clean. You know, you can come along and within 6 months to 2 years you'd be a highly respected person. You know, if you, you know, you imagine you've got people, they're in their office, they're in their work, or they're at home on the couch watching TV thinking, why my, you know, life is so bad. No one cares about them. The family is constantly criticizing them. Their friends are using them. They go to work, they go to the office, and it's just constantly being abused by the authorities and, you know, haggled by the workmates and put down. There's a sense of loneliness, you know, out there on the streets. Not your neighbours don't care about you. people on the streets don't care about you. Very lonely world in Kali Yuga. Despite the fact that, you know, people are surrounded. And then all of a sudden someone comes to ISKCON. They have, everyone's nice to them. Everyone wants to praise them. People want to do service. the center of attention, you know, there's so much nice food at this. Oh yeah, this will do me. But still, one has to align oneself with this one, with Krishna, the Prabhupada. That's a slightly different thing. May or may not happen. I do know, you know, several people, several families who, you know, they're regular visitors and supporters of ISKCON over many, many years. I know, you know, some amongst the Indian community who will refuse to accept that, you know, Krishna is superior to Vishnu. After decades, they will not accept that. And every time I meet them, they have the same conversation. And that, you know. But, you know, generally if you see them, you know, they just, you know, they're part of ISKCON. But, and even, you know, there are many aspects of, you know, there are many aspects of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada's philosophy. You read the Srimad Bhagavatam, boy, there's some hard things to swallow there, you know, for we have a lot of, you know, there's a lot of difficulty with, you know, the rights of women in ISKCON. You know, what is their place? There's a lot of discussion. And, you know, there's how we preach to new people. You know, there are many, many big differences of opinion, you know, and, you know, what Srila Prabhupada gave us was, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, one thing that's very difficult for devotees to accommodate is that many aspects of the Srimad Bhagavatam are giving the standard by which we can then perhaps adjust our activities. So in other words, if we look at, you know, just as an example, if we look at in Vedic times, there was a standard behaviour for men, there was a standard behaviour for women. So it's good to know that. It's good to know that standard. Of course, not that we can you know, follow that standard in the same way as they did in Vedic times. That's not possible. But still, understanding the standard is important. See? Because it always means that we don't create a new standard, but we try and follow the standard to the best of our ability. But if we don't know the standard, we may actually be trying to follow something wrong. Just like truthfulness is a standard for everyone, for men and women. It will always remain a standard. Not that lying and cheating is a standard, because lying and cheating is so rampant and, and you have to do it in Kali Yuga to get by, you know, and what have you. Therefore, we should make that the new standard and just try and do it really well. Similarly, you know, for men and women, there are certain roles. There are standards of behaviour in the dealings with each other, in their social interactions, and the way they dress, and, you know, their attitude to raising children and cooperating, and so many different things. And to the best of our ability, and in a way that facilitates the movement becoming a very attractive, you know, place for people to want to come and develop their devotional service, and in order to make, you know, ISKCON not a difficult place for people to come and, you know, live and interact and, you know, be, you know, there are many adjustments, huge amount of adjustments, like that. So, but the standard is important to understand. The standard is there. So, you know, that's one aspect of the Srimad Bhagavatam which is sometimes, very difficult, that there is preaching and, you know, application according to realization, time, place and circumstance, but we shouldn't throw the standard out. Oh, you know, this is old-fashioned, that's old-fashioned. You know, you never reject the standard as something, oh, that's the past, that's something. Maybe they did that Prabhupada's time, or Chaitanya's time, or Krishna's time, but, you know, we have nothing to do with that aspect of the Srimad Bhagavatam. We do. Every aspect of the Srimad Bhagavatam is, you know, important because it gives us the standard, and we try to follow that the best we possibly can and in the most practical way, which is effective for preaching. Like that. So, you know, there are many aspects. So, but there are, you know, there are many devotees who, when they read those standards in Krishna consciousness, they actually reject Prabhupada's mood and his, you know, that teaching. And somehow, you know, this part of the Bhagavatam, I'm not particularly interested in that part of Prabhupada's teaching, I'm more interested in this part. Actually accepting Prabhupada means accepting Prabhupada fully. Accepting Prabhupada fully means that we can understand Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And if we understand Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we can become Krishna's devotees, like that. So, now, for one who is aligned with Srila Prabhupada's mood and mission, Krishna becomes very, 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 loving and, lenient. And we see here with Lord Brahma. Now, Lord Brahma, he fell down from, his position as in devotional service. But Krishna made arrangements through some instructions by his sons, and then he also, by his own merciful, will, he gave Brahma the ability within his heart. You know, Krishna acted within Brahma's heart also to help him. And it's not unusual, because as Prabhupada is saying here, in this material world, it's very easy, even within devotional service, to again be attracted. we see that in the case of Jamunacharya. Jamunacharya was a great devotee. Very, very wonderful. You know, at the age of 12, you know, he was so devoted to Krishna and always absorbed in Krishna. At the age of 12, he knew the entire Bhagavad Gita, you know, by heart. Every verse, and he could speak on every verse at the age of 12. He was so devoted. Of course, then he defeated the Digvijay, gained half a kingdom as a result, and gradually as he became a king, by association, he became absorbed in again in so many material activities of sex life, and sense gratification, and sensual indulgence, and, you know, as kings do, and completely fell away from the path of devotional service. But by the grace of Krishna, by the grace of his grandfather, who had a disciple, Ram Misra, they made a plan to deliver Jamunacharya. Gradually, Jamunacharya was actually brought back to his situation in devotional service. So sometimes, you know, even great personalities, they can make very, very serious blunders, you know, just, again, the material energy can just cover them over, okay. But as Krishna's devotees, what we see here is that if we want to please Krishna, we have to do those things that would please Krishna. And that means that when someone is having difficulty in devotional service, we would do what Krishna would do and what Krishna's devotees would do, and that is try to help them. Not take the opportunity that, oh, here is some fault, here is some weakness, I may be able to exploit this to my greatest advantage and finally show that I am a greater devotee than this person and take this opportunity to my full satisfaction. Okay. Or, you know, I see that, you know, this person is enjoying this facility, this respect, and now, you know, I wanted that facility, I wanted that position, here is the opportunity that I can take full advantage. There's the weakness, I can exploit that. I will advertise that devotee's problems, you know, far and wide. So, then again we question, you know, whether we're Krishna's devotees or, you know, devotees of their mind or senses like that. But, you know, as Krishna's devotees, one would try to act in the way that Krishna acts, in the way that Krishna's devotees act. And, you know, understand that, you know, for every devotee, what does, you know, if it's possible for Brahma, if it's possible for Jamunacharya, these personalities... And as we've seen, you know, different devotees in ISKCON, even in very high positions, to again become completely enamored by the material energy, it's certainly possible for us. And we would like to think, of course, that if we slipped up, that someone's going to come knocking on my door and say, come on, Ganga, you know, get out of my, in a loving way, and help me get back on the path. Not that they're going to, you know, say, oh, he was always a rascal, you know, good riddance, like that. And, again, you know, I have a very vivid dream life, so I'll tell you another one, but I take notice of them, but you don't have to. But anyway, when I was... a brahmachari, of course, as a young devotee, you practically struggle all day, every day to, you know, do what you have to do as a devotee. And you're always thinking, you know, I'm not going to make it. You know? You know, I remember distinctly, you know, as a young devotee, you know, often, you know, if I could just get through to the end of the week, you know, to the Sunday feast, you know, Sunday feast, yeah, yeah. If I just get through the weekend, you know, I'll have another go next week, you know. And anyway, one night I was having this dream that I was with my brother, some of his friends, some of the devotees, and, you know, we were walking through this very tall grass, you know, in this field that just went for hundreds of miles in all directions. And as we kept walking, the grass just kept getting higher and higher and higher until it was like, you know, twice as the height of me. And so what happened was that my brother, his friends, the devotees, they sort of walked on, and by the time I sort of fumbled around, where am I? By the time I realised that I was completely lost, that they were out of, you know, hearing range or out of sight, and here I am, there's hundreds and hundreds of miles, and there's just this, you can't see this far, and I just understood, I'm lost, I'm finished, like that. And then This is the part that makes the dream special. Then I heard this singing from the heavens. I won't try to imitate it, but they were singing Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Gaudiya Vaisnava Sri Gaudiya Vaisnava. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. But it was a chorus, it was like a chorus of angels. I've never have, and I probably never will hear that singing. Beautiful. And I looked up and I was thinking, and then I just felt this hand sort of come down from the sky, lift me up, and just put me right over the top of grass and just plop me back down with my god brothers, my brother, and that. And I thought, I woke up. And, you know, I always took that, you know, this is the beauty of ISKCON. You know, sometimes we can be a little hard on each other. But we should always remember that Krishna is always there as well. That's the special thing. Krishna is always there. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Prabhupada, the acharyas, and they will always, you know, if you just keep trying to the best of your ability, they will, you know, not let you fall behind. Not plop you straight back. Just right where you were, where you should be. Anyway, I'll leave it there. If anyone has any questions or comments, intuition is where you see generally the whole picture in one go. And sometimes when you have to see the whole picture to see sometimes what's missing. You know, when you see the whole picture, and you see, oh, something missing there. So that little detail, sometimes that little detail, it pops in your mind very easily because you see the whole thing. If you don't see the whole thing, it's very difficult to see what is missing. So intuition is like that. You're given the whole picture just within a moment. Even it comes to you, you may not necessarily be trying to evoke that whole image. You may sometimes be thinking about something or just not thinking about anything. You know, that picture comes. Intuition is also here, you know, because it is related to the verse, because, you know, Krishna says, I give the intelligence by which one can come to me. Which means that, you know, Buddha Yoga, we are getting intuition, we are getting instruction within the heart. And that ability also to see the whole picture is made, in other words, we can refine our intuition by always helping ourselves to see the bigger picture. So that it's easier, you know, so we're trying to see things from a very broad perspective and try to, you know, be all-round devotees and understand Krishna. When we have that background of Krishna consciousness, the messages that we get, we can fit them into the right place, see? So, for instance, you know, intuition can be like this as well. So if you're driving a car, you first have to, you know, you learn to use the gears, and for those who still use cars with gears, you know, you've got to learn to steer, you've got to, you know, use the brakes, use the clutch, keep an eye on the mirror, the rear vision mirrors, watch your speed, watch the traffic lights, watch the pedestrians. So a lot of things. And sometimes what you do is you just learn, you know, a few things at once. Sometimes you sit there and you're just learning how to steer and someone else is doing the gears and like that. So, you know, there's no question of having intuition that, oh, I should be in second gear now. You haven't even started like that. But one, you see what I mean? There are certain things that, you know, even some intuition comes, you can't place it in the big picture because there's too many things that you haven't formed a larger conception. Once you learn how to drive that car and you've sort of got a bit of a feel for the wheel and the clutch and things like that, then you get a feel for the road. You know, it's and then, you know, you get an intuition and you can just put it into the right spot very quickly because everything else, you know where to, like that. So, intuition develops more and more as we become more and more Krishna conscious with a broader aspect of Krishna consciousness. Then those teachings from Krishna, you know, we can put them in and we can see that, yes, you know, that instruction that I'm getting, it doesn't conflict with, you know, Krishna consciousness. So, you know, that's good intuition like that. So intuition is really something which is properly handled the more advanced in Krishna consciousness one gets. And it's more likely to be misused the more we have in the beginning stages. In the beginning stages, actually, generally what happens is that newer devotees, because in the name of being individual, you know, we want to use our intuition and not be following someone else's instructions and like that. So, you know, there's a problem there. And of course, but as a society, we have to be very careful that every time, you know, we have to understand that's a tendency. If every time they want to use their intuition and we smash them, you just do it as I say, we're going to create problems with, you know. So we have to, you know, give a little bit of leeway for their intuition. So we allow them to be a bit creative. Even sometimes they're doing something wrong, as we gave the example with Srila Prabhupada, you know, they're carving the deities and, you know, smoking cigarettes. So, you know, they're wanting to do things in their own, you know, way. This is me, you know, this is me being relaxed and this is who I am, you know, like that. But so there's some gentle, helpful hints. Don't put your cigarettes on top of Jagannath. And, you know, but you know, we do have to allow the new devotees to, you know, let them have a little bit of intuition because it's natural for them want to do that. Because generally, people associate individuality with doing things their own way, you know, as they feel intuitively like that. So, but actually, properly understood, intuition is best handled the more one is advancing Krishna consciousness.
I just want to share some of my realization after coming to ISKCON. I've been told by the senior devotees in the past that Lord Shiva is the supreme Vaishnava, topmost Vaishnava. If that is so, which I believe it is, why don't we celebrate Shivaratri in ISKCON?
We do. Is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam? In the 10th canto, you see that Nanda Maharaj and the Brajavasis, it says there that, you know, it's not a regular principle that devotees must, but sometimes they do. They celebrate Shivaratri. Devotees who go to the holy dham will quite often make that one of the first stops to, you know, worship Lord Shiva. Some devotees have Gopeshvara in the form of Lord Shiva as a shalagram, which they worship on a daily basis. Mm.
Sorry, but I have a calendar. In that there is no mention of Shivaratri.
It's on my Vaishnava calendar. It's on my calendar. It's on my calendar.
Krishna says, among the Rudras and Lord Shiva.
Yes.
And there are four samples.
Rudra Sampradaya.
Yeah. Yeah. And I used to pray to Lord Shiva not to get material benefits or even liberation. I just was praying in full devotion. And when I came to ISKCON, I asked one of the devotees, "You don't talk about Lord Shiva, why is that?" He said, "No, we consider Krishna as the Supreme, which I accept is Krishna as the Supreme." Mm. So I get conflicts of my mind sometimes. I chant 16 rounds a day. Mm. I have all Prabhupada books, which is giving me a lot of comfort when I read it. But occasionally I get disturbed in my mind about whether to completely reject Rudra Sampradaya or just follow.
No, you don't have to reject. for instance, my name is Gangeshwar, which is the name of Lord Shiva. I'm not Krishna Das or, you know, Gaura Hari Das or Gangeshwar Das, servant of Lord Shiva. Now, when I was given that name, previously my name was Ganga Das. I was initiated once before. And I thought, okay, what is the significance of Gangeshwar? Because I always take it, you know, that by Krishna's grace, I'm given a name, it's meant to help me in my devotional service. So I spent a long time studying Lord Shiva. I still do. I love to study Lord Shiva. And, you know, what I found about that the name Gangeshwar is, you know, Lord Shiva wears he has the Ganga coming from his head. And that indicates that on his head he likes to wear the dust of Lord Vishnu or Krishna. Okay? So we take that from Lord Shiva. He likes to wear the dust of Krishna's feet on his head, which is symbolized by the Gandhis like that. But also, what it also symbolizes is that, you know, when the Ganges was coming down from the heavenly planets, the Mandakini, is it? And when it was coming to Earth, there was the danger that it was going to literally obliterate everything. Ganga is a very, very powerful force. Feminine force. Lord Shiva captured that power, and because he is so fixed at the lotus feet of Krishna, he was able to just let that Ganges drip drop by drop into the world to create benefit, not destruction. And I try to follow that mood of Lord Shiva, that, you know, the nature of Kali Yuga, you know, being a devotee in Kali Yuga, in the Western world, it's like, you know, things are always ready to smash you to pieces at every moment. And somehow you have to remain fixed at Krishna's lotus feet. And that gives you the ability to stop that destructive force and take it as just drops of purification that is able to be accommodated by myself and others. So that steadfastness of Lord Shiva inspires me.
Finally, I just want to comment, share my another understanding. Bhagavad in his book says Lord Shiva is a very exalted personality, hard to understand. That's what I've read in Bhagavad. The mystic, hard to understand Lord Shiva.
Yes. So, you know, so we try to understand through Krishna, and Krishna and Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada. So we read the Bhagavad Gita, and then we see Lord Shiva as Lord Shiva would like to be known. And we read the Srimad Bhagavatam and we see Lord Shiva as Lord Shiva would like to be known, as Krishna would, you know, helps us to understand. And we hear Prabhupada's talks and lectures, and, you know, we go to the Holy Dham and we discuss, you know, Lord Shiva even in the Holy Dham, so that we understand. Very, very difficult. And, you know, sometimes, you know, when we come to ISKCON, you know, we're always beginners in our understanding of Shiva, Krishna, Prabhupada, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but by dedicating over the course of a lifetime, you know, we cannot understand Lord Shiva in many, many thousands of births. But we're very fortunate that in the course of one lifetime, if we can understand enough about Lord Shiva and his relationship with Krishna, that will allow us to go back to Godhead. We can just, you know, understand. And what is enough? That which is in the Gita, that which is in the Bhagavatam, that which is in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that is enough. If we can understand that, you're qualified to get Lord Shiva's blessings, Krishna's blessings, and go back to Godhead. But otherwise, over many, many millions of lifetimes, we will not understand Shiva or anyone.
Mm.
Thank you. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.